The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
So, on Tuesday evening, I was nearly arrested by security at DePaul University. My crime? I set foot on campus. On Wednesday evening, protesters tried to shut down a lecture I was giving at University of Wisconsin in Madison, and police officers were told to stand down by the administration. Now, the problem on America's college campuses is not just the snowflake college students. Since the 1960s, there have always been lots of young people insistent on quashing free speech and destroying campus freedom. But just as in the 1960s, it actually takes cowardly administrators to make a leftist fascist dream come true. That was the story to DePaul. Months ago, the alt-right popularizer Milo visited DePaul, where protesters greeted him by taking over the stage and screaming at him and threatening violence, and security didn't do anything. The administration responded by banning both Yiannopoulos and me. They added me because students at Cal State Los Angeles had nearly rioted when I visited. This week, I showed up at DePaul at the invitation of the Young America's Foundation group on campus. The administration made clear that they'd shut down the event if I was a speaker, so the group attempted to register me as a guest. The administration blocked that. So we attempted to register me as a member of fellow speaker Christina Hoff Sommers' team. The administration blocked that too. In an unprecedented move, expecting my arrival, they mandated that everybody wear special wristbands and be screened by metal detectors so they could ensure that I didn't end up in the hall. When I showed up, I was confronted by about 30 security guards from the university. There were five or six local cops present as well as the sheriff from Cook County to facilitate an arrest if security decided to move on me. And they did openly threaten me with arrest if I attempted to attend Christina's lecture. You can see the video at dailywire.com. Here's the amazing thing. There were no protesters. None. Not a single one. But the administration was so intent on placating protesters who didn't even show up, they banned me personally from entering a campus to give a speech on free speech. By the way, that was just the beginning. Last night at UW-Madison, student protesters stood up every few minutes and began screaming safety and shame to disrupt. We'll show you the video in just a few minutes. They'd been planning it for days. They even had a secret Facebook group titled F White Supremacy, Interrupting Ben Shapiro. Why didn't security clear them out, even when they marched down to the front of the stage and attempted to block me physically from the audience? Well, because the administration had told university police not to remove the protesters at all. And if they had removed the protesters, they should shut down the entire event. You getting this? So if the protesters disturb things, the police can't remove them. And if they do remove them, they have to remove everybody. That would mean 20 protesters could simply stick around and by doing so prevent 450 people who'd spent all day waiting from hearing a lecture on free speech. As UW student Jordan Zadra said, this mentality gives protesters a license to shut down any speech they don't like. This is the rioter's veto, and it only exists thanks to the cowardice of administrators. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show. And we open, of course, by saying hello to our advertisers over at texture.com/Ben. So if you're somebody who wants to binge read, right, you're not just a binge watcher like Netflix or a binge eater, you're a binge reader. You just need to read all the time. But you don't really want to buy separate subscriptions to 1,000 different newspapers and magazines. You need texture.com. Texture.com is fantastic. It is an app, and once you go to Texture, it allows you to get articles and backlogs from the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or your tablet. And right now, you get a free trial right now when you go to texture.com/Ben. You get immediate entry to all of the top magazines. You get the back issues. You get bonus video content. You start reading, binge reading right now, free. Go to texture.com/Ben. I love it. I use it myself. I am, as you know, one of the world's most prolific readers, and so texture.com has made it significantly more easy for me to get all the articles that I want to read from great magazines, and the list of magazines is virtually endless. I mean, it's all my sports magazines, it's all my news magazines, I mean, it's everything from Sports Illustrated, and I don't have to even subscribe to Sports Illustrated anymore. I just go to Texture, and I can get access to their articles, to other magazines like some of the news magazines like Time, The New Yorker, which is fun to read for kicks and giggles if you're a conservative. But texture.com is the name of the app, and you go to texture.com/Ben to get that free trial right now. Check it out, see if you like it, and then if you like it, keep it. So here we go. All right, lots to get to. So we start with my experiences at University of Wisconsin last night in Madison. and it is it was pretty amazing. So after DePaul tried to arrest me, DePaul also threatened to shut down the entire event if I went in. So I went over to University of Wisconsin at Madison. And while I was at University of Wisconsin at Madison, we found out hours in advance there were going to be a bunch of protest groups. The rumor was there were going to be two Black Lives Matter groups, and there was also going to be a white supremacist group, which has been about the state of my year. And so they told us all this, and they told us they were only assigning three cops, right? Three cops for like 500 people and a bunch of protesters. If this sounds like a bad idea, that's because it is a terrible idea. It's truly an awful idea. And it was designed to be an awful idea. As I say, the administration told the cops to stand back and let all of this happen. And they said that if I said that people had to, you know, be moved out, or if there was an attempt to make an arrest, they would have to actually shut down the entire event and empty the hall. So get rid of 450 people because 20 people decided to disrupt. Well, things didn't go precisely how the protesters wanted. They started standing up and shouting and interrupting. They walked down to the front of the stage. But the crowd was not having any of it, and neither was I. Here is a montage of some of the better moments from last night's lecture at University of Wisconsin at Madison.
It's time. The folks, in case you hadn't noticed, the folks with the swastikas aren't too nice to my type. And by the way, I'm fully aware of this private Facebook page titled F White Supremacy Interrupting Ben Shapiro. Well, with all due respect, F you right back, gang.
Get out! Yo, your baby! Your baby needs to get out!
It's like Game of Thrones. Should I get undressed and walk down the aisle? Decency. 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 Decency.
Free speech matters. Free speech matters.
Safety. 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 Safety.
Okay, so it was good times, as you can see all around. Eventually, they left. The double flip-off was in response to the fact that all of the protesters, as they were leaving, were shouting F white supremacy and flipping off everybody in the hall, including me. So it was just a joy. I did enjoy the students there are fantastic. They were really good natured. And it does tell you something about why the Trump phenomenon happened. It really does. What it tells you is that people don't care about the response nearly as much as they care about the fact that the left can't control itself. The left simply cannot control itself. They are out of their minds. And because of that, people have reacted to that by saying, screw all you people, we're not gonna do anything you want. Even if somebody is a bad person, like Trump was during the primaries and the general, even if someone says ridiculous things, you don't have the right to stand on ceremony since you've been saying this stuff about everybody, including Mitt Romney. So you keep saying to us, F you, you're white supremacists. Well, F you all, and we'll elect Trump just to show you. Now, do I think that that's the best response? No, I don't. But I do think that it's a justifiable and understandable is a better word, an understandable response by people. And I have that same response. I do. I have the same feeling of, you guys can't control yourselves. You can't engage in the nature of Western civilization. You can't do any of it. And then you turn around and you blame us when things go wrong. You can all go to hell. And that was sort of the feeling last night. There was a real feeling of brotherhood inside the room between all of the people who stayed and toughed it out. This is like a 25-minute thing. I mean, they shut it down. They were yelling. They were screaming. They were shouting shame. They were also shouting safety at one point. When they were chanting safety, I said a couple of things. They chanted safety, and I said, number one, you are safe. You're all making trouble right now, and nobody's punching you. That's America. That's great. And then they continued to shout safety, at which point I just said, I don't understand who farted. But in any case, you can see why this drove the Trump movement. You can see why it drove the right to victory in this election. And you can see why if the left keeps playing this game, they're playing with fire politically. Kellyanne Conway, I think, actually summed it up pretty well. She's the spokesperson, obviously, for the Trump campaign. And here's what she had to say.
But, you know, we're just treating these adolescents and these millennials like precious snowflakes. I'm just amazed how many texts and emails I'm receiving as one person of all these professors saying you don't have to take the test, you can get college credit if you protest. What's the worst thing that can happen to these millennials? That Donald Trump will make good on his promise to create 25 million new jobs, that he'll unleash energy investment, that he'll get rid of the Obamacare penalty on day one so that you're not forced to buy government-run health care.
Okay, so look, I think that she's exaggerating the case for all the things that Trump's going to do for millennials, but, and I understand why millennials don't like Trump. You know, they don't like the language that he uses or the things that he's in. But the precious snowflake idea, we're just going to shut it down. We can't go to class. We can't participate in normal society. We can't actually take tests. We have to get out of essays. All of this is a bunch of crap. And people react to it as you would expect them to, which is grow up. Grow up. Get a life. Grow up. Stop being such babies. And that's totally understandable. It really is. And Ted Cruz gets it right, too. Cruz was on TV yesterday, and he said that all these protests against Donald Trump, they're showing that hypocrisy is on rank display from the left.
We have seen hypocrisy on rank display from the left. All of the folks who jumped on their high horse and were lecturing to President-elect Trump, you've got to accept the results of the election. These are now the idiots that are protesting in the street and laying their bodies down in front of cars and disrupting traffic. We had an election. The people spoke. Democracy is a powerful, powerful way of choosing. Right. And you know, I think Americans across this country, and I think this is across the line of Republicans, of Democrats, of independents, of libertarians, I think Americans are excited about the opportunity to have an administration that actually protects our rights, that brings back jobs.
Okay, and Cruz is right that, of course, the people did speak and these people are making trouble. It's just driving more people into Trump's open arms. I mean, as I said yesterday, I, who really do not like Steve Bannon, am now in the position of defending Steve Bannon because of the media overreach. I, who did not vote for Donald Trump, am in the position of rooting hard for Donald Trump to stop these kinds of people because, come on, this is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. You shut down traffic. You act like babies. And last night, I actually let off the speech by saying, I brought a diaper and some safety pins. I said, you guys want to wear safety pins? I brought something that you can use also, and it's a diaper. And I said, you know, the first thing is, if you want to have a discussion, let's have a discussion. If you want to act like babies, please leave. I said, don't act like babies. And the first thing they do is they start interrupting and shouting like my two-year-old. All of this is deeply frustrating. All of it is deeply upsetting. The fact the administration goes along with it is also even more upsetting. These are people in position of power who should know better. The rest of the state of Wisconsin looks at Madison and they say, you people are out of your minds. No wonder we're going to vote for Donald Trump. And it's the entire left now. The entire left has reacted to Trump with such insanity. And I think they probably would have reacted about 70% the same if it had been somebody like Cruz or Rubio. But the fact that they're reacting the way they are to Trump, it actually is just making people more likely to ignore them. Vicente Fox, the former president of Mexico, just a few months ago, he was cursing at Trump. He's not going to build, we're not going to build your effing wall. And now he's calling Trump illegitimate. Do you think that drives Americans into or away from the arms of Donald Trump?
How could people in power in Mexico do business with him?
Right now, I think he's an illegitimate president of the United States.
Why is he illegitimate? He just won an election.
He would have to legitimize. He didn't win the general election, so he's got too many people against him, and they have shown out on the streets. But anyway, in Mexico, we can be rude also. As I said, we're strong now. We're going to defend our people, wherever they are, in Mexico or outside of Mexico in the United States. We are not going to let this guy to offend them anymore, to offend their dignity, and more so to deny the enormous contribution they make to U.S. economy.
Okay, so you see Vicente Fox saying, we're going to stand up for all the illegal immigrants, and we're going to stand up against Donald Trump. And Americans go, why do we want to hear from the former president of Mexico about why you're going to stand up for illegal immigrants in the United States when Mexico is making a lot of money off of remittances from illegal citizens living in the United States? Why is that a good thing? By the way, it's also funny to watch Vicente Fox pretend that Donald Trump is the only Bulgarian when literally right behind him is a portrait of Vicente Fox and his wife. I've never actually been in a place where I wanted someone to paint my portrait, but if I did, I probably wouldn't hang it behind me during interviews. It seems kind of weird. Meanwhile, the Democrats continue to demonstrate their hypocrisy on every level. Josh Earnest over at the White House, he's already ripping into Trump. He's saying that Trump is undermining our NATO alliances. Now, there's truth to this. I mean, Donald Trump spent a lot of the primaries talking about how NATO, the members of NATO, weren't paying up and that we would abandon them if they didn't pay their fair share. What people are forgetting, by the way, is that when you say to countries, not just in NATO, but across the world, that if you guys don't pay us more money, then we're going to abandon you, China is willing to pay them that money in Southeast Asia in order to make them allies, right? Russia is willing to bribe countries in order to exert influence. We're not the only players in this game. It's not just a matter of you pay us money or we'll abandon you. There are other players who are going to seek to fill that vacuum. But Josh Earnest says that supporting our NATO allies is a longstanding tradition. He just can't believe that Trump wouldn't do it.
President Obama has made the case for is the longstanding, strong, bipartisan tradition of strong relations between the United States and our NATO allies. And President Obama certainly dedicated a significant portion of his presidency to making sure that that relationship was deepened, that that relationship was strengthened in a way that had enormous and significant national security and economic benefits for the American people. And there certainly is a tradition of presidents of both parties choosing to pursue that, but ultimately President-elect Trump will have to determine what sort of path he wants to chart from here.
Okay, and of course that's not even true. I mean, Obama has undermined NATO routinely. He didn't do anything when Ukraine was invaded by Russia. He didn't do anything to defend the Baltic states when Putin is threatening them. He removed the missile defense system from Poland, even though they were asking for it. He removed it from the Czech Republic, even though they were asking for it. The idea that Obama has stood up for NATO, that he's some sort of hawk on foreign policy, is just laughable. Today, Obama was overseas meeting with Angela Merkel, and he was spending time talking about how Trump needs to stand up to Russia. From the guy who's been bending over backwards for Russia, from the guy who drew a red line with the Syrians and then backed off of it and let Russia take over the place, from the guy who's let Russia, again, take over Crimea, from the guy who's allowed Vladimir Putin to become a world figure again, right? That guy is lecturing Trump. And so normal people look at this and they say, you don't get to lecture anybody. Go screw yourselves. Yeah, I really think that Trump is, and we'll see what he becomes, but for now, what Trump is a giant pulsating middle finger right at the left, right at the heart of the left. And they do deserve it. There is justice for the left in the fact that Donald Trump is president. Does that mean that he's going to be wonderful? I don't know yet. I don't think so. That's why I didn't vote for him. But we will find out, and we'll find out in January. We'll get to some of his cabinet picks and what he's doing right now, some of which is very clever. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes. But the left continues to just make mockeries of themselves. Like, here's the ACLU director, and he says that opposing Donald Trump is going to be what the ACLU is all about.
Well, he's going to try. And he might get part of the way through, and they will definitely claw him back. Let's take the ban on immigrants or the deportation of immigrants. 11 million people he wants to deport. On Sunday, 60 Minutes, he said he wants to focus on 2 to 3 million of the immigrants who broke the law.
Immediately, yeah.
How's he going to find them? The criminals are not just lined up in some database who happen to be immigrants. He's going to have to comb through immigrant communities. How's he going to have to do that? Through dragnet searches. Through unlawful searches and seizures. Do you think the Department of Homeland Security is going to say, oh, you undocumented immigrant, let me see if you're a criminal. Oh, no criminal? Walk free. Mm-hmm. You think they're going to let the undocumented immigrants who don't have a criminal records just slip away? We're in for the fight of our lives. And when the president-elect said on Sunday that he's still going to try to deport 2 to 3 million people, he's talking dragnet, unconstitutional searches and seizures that will violate the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the 14th Amendment. And what's going to be so intense for us is that we have to document those cases. This is not something you can bring a class action lawsuit on behalf of all the undocumented immigrants. You have to go and show the cases and the fact patterns, talk to the clients, depose people, make sure you have all the important work that will go into the necessary
limit. I don't need to listen to Anthony Romero lecture us about legality. The ACLU is a hypocritical organization. They spent the entire Obama administration doing nothing about Obama's violation of civil liberties, everything from the IRS targeting conservatives to the DOJ targeting the Associated Press. And the ACLU had virtually nothing to say about any of this. Trump has not talked about dragnets, at least not in a while. When Trump says he wants to deport criminal illegal immigrants, he's talking about the same people Obama says he wants to deport. I didn't see the ACLU talking about how Obama couldn't deport criminals because he'd have to impose a dragnet. Right? They're reading into Trump something that he never said. But again, it's all hypocrisy. It's all over the top. It's all the left cannot just deal with the fact that there are things they don't like about Trump. He has to be turned into Super Hitler, who's going to send his SS goon squads into illegal immigrant communities and start rounding people up. And my bet is that he actually doesn't do any of that stuff. That when all is said and done, Donald Trump ends up imposing pretty much the plan that Jeb Bush wanted to impose, which was shut the border, figure out what to do with the people here. I think that's pretty much what Trump will look like. I don't think we're talking mass deportations. I think that was all for show. I don't think we'll see what happens. But the ACLU is certainly jumping the gun on all of this stuff. Now, the media still can't deal with the fact that Donald Trump won, and so they're just making fools of themselves. We'll get to all of that in just a minute. But first, we have to say hello to a new advertiser. They spoke with some of the founders of this company. It's called Legacy Box. Legacy Box is fantastic. Okay, so if you're somebody who has a bunch of old video, you know, a lot of videotapes like VHS recordings, or you have old film reels, or even if you have DVDs, and you want to compile all your old memories onto a memory stick, on a memory drive, but particularly if you have the VHS or the DVDs, you have pictures that you want to get converted over to digital, very time-consuming, very expensive, My family just did it with some of my childhood videos, and it was very, very pricey. Legacy Box helps make this happen for you in a quick, affordable, and convenient way. So here's how it works. You take Legacy Box, you get in contact with them at legacybox.com/Ben, and they send you a box, and you put in all your old tapes, your film, pictures, audio recordings, you send them everything, and then you get everything back in a couple of weeks on DVD or on a thumb drive. So instead of you having to worry about there's a fire in the house, grab all the memories, everything is on a thumb drive, everything is on a DVD for you, it's ready to watch, it's ready to share. It's a beautiful thing to do for your parents, by the way. It's a beautiful thing to do for your grandparents. And it's a great thing to do to preserve all those childhood memories so the moths don't get at them or so that age doesn't weather the film and destroy your childhood. And that's what Legacy Box is for. They take care of everything. They put a barcode on every item so that you can trace where it is in the process of uploading and editing. And 250,000 families have used them. It's a really great service. I trust them with my memories. I think they're going to be an amazing company. It's legacybox.com/Ben to get a 40% discount on your order. Again, legacybox.com/Ben, 40% discount on your order. Perfect Christmas present for mom and dad. Perfect Christmas present for the rest of the family. These are things that you're going to want to keep forever, and that means that you have to put them in a storable place where they're not going to degrade and where you don't have to dig through boxes and boxes of tapes in order to get what you want. So everything gets uploaded digitally. Great company, great idea. I'm very, very big into the idea that you ought to preserve your family memories, and there's a great way to do it. It's legacybox.com/Ben to get that 40% discount on Legacy Box. Really, first-rate company. Couldn't be prouder to be advertising with them. Okay, so the media obviously are pushing this notion that fake media is what drove Trump to victory. They're looking for any solution but the obvious one, which is that Hillary Clinton lost because Hillary Clinton was a bad candidate. Karl Rove has a good piece at the Wall Street Journal breaking down the stats this week and looking at the fact that Hillary Clinton won somewhere between 4 and 5 million fewer votes than Obama did in 2012. And yes, that makes a difference. That's the entire margin of loss. In the end, Mitt Romney will have won only about 400,000, 500,000 fewer votes than Trump did in this election cycle. It's just that no one voted for Hillary Clinton. Everybody thought Hillary was awful, which is the real reason why she lost. But they're trying to blame fake news. They're trying to claim that it's all these fake news headlines that are responsible for Donald Trump winning, that people consume it. The problem is this. Fake news exists on both sides. It exists on both sides. On the left, it exists in the form of mainstream media, which literally just make things up sometimes about Donald Trump. I mean, there are many times during this campaign where it was clear that the media were attempting to make things up. Right now, the media are attempting to exaggerate the case against Steve Bannon by claiming that Steve is a white supremacist. Steve isn't a white supremacist. Steve is not a racist or an anti-Semite, as far as I know. Steve is a guy who's very dirty in politics, and he's happy to pander to white supremacists if he thinks that it fulfills his ends. And he holds some of the same policy positions with regard to closing borders and tariffs that some of the folks on the alt-right do. But that doesn't mean that he's a racist and anti-Semite. The left has to exaggerate everything. And what that does is it ends up drawing support from the right. The right reacts to everything the left do. Then we react to decades of fake news by saying, okay, well, we won't believe anything you say. And so everybody ends up believing in headlines that aren't real because truth is a casualty of politics in this election cycle, which is really sad and really pathetic. But unfortunately, that's the way it is. And the media just refuse to acknowledge their own responsibility for it, and so they continue to engage in it. So David Ignatius, who I believe is at the Washington Post, maybe he's at Slate, he came out and he says that the Trump transition team, they just had a shakeup. But listen to the language that he's using about the Trump transition team.
I think there is a kind of a night of the long knives quality as this Trump team sorts out who's going to be on top, who's going to have the president-elect's ear. Jared Kushner is a person who has a deep political personal history with Christie. I think there was general concern among the traditional foreign policy group in Washington when Mike Rogers, who was a key transition figure, former House Intelligence Committee chairman, a conservative Republican, but somebody who worked very hard to make his committee work, when he was removed, ousted from a key position over the weekend, and others came into the center, I think the issue really is, are they going to have qualified, experienced people directing these most sensitive activities of the U.S. government, or people who are less knowledgeable, less trustworthy? I think there is a...
Okay, so notice the language that he uses there. The way that the language that he used there is really amazing, right? He suggests that there's a Night of the Long Knives. For people who don't know history, the Night of the Long Knives occurred in 1933. It was after Hitler took power. And the Night of the Long Knives was Hitler literally murdering his opponents. So he can't just say that there's been a campaign shakeup. A lot of it is very personal. Some of it is pretty vicious politics. He has to compare it to Hitler literally murdering his chief political opposition. And then the media say, no, 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 you can't pay attention to fake news. How are we supposed to tell fake news from real news when you trot out crap like this? How are we supposed to know fake news from real news when you still say that Jon Stewart is some sort of moral halcyon? You know, Jon Stewart, for years and years and years, did a fake news program. That was his program. And he was the number one most trusted news person among young people in America. The media loved him. They talked about how he was the real truth teller, how he was the one who was going to shine a light on everything, was this comedian who would literally just read a headline and then make a face like this. And everybody was supposed to treat it as though that was normal. They trafficked in fake news for decades, and now they're trying to blame a few fake news headlines on Facebook, or even a bevy of fake news headlines on Facebook, for having twisted this election. And we've been living in the fake news cycle for literally as long as I have been alive because of the left. And so now they're saying that there are right-wing sites trafficking in fake news. They're claiming the Daily Wire traffics in fake news. Okay, I edit the site. There's no fake news on Daily Wire. That's absurd. They can't name headlines. I'd like to see them name headlines. Like, if we make a mistake, and I know about it, we immediately remove it. Or correct it, because that's the way it works. But the idea that Daily Wire is fake news in the same way The Onion is news, or we're fake news, you know, that Jon Stewart is real news, but we're fake news, it's the left attempting to define away their problem. Their real problem is that the news was not pro-Democrat this year. The news was not in favor of Hillary Clinton this year, but they can't stand it. Jon Stewart, the leading purveyor of fake news in America, probably in American history, he is now being treated as a news personality. Here is Jon Stewart commenting on Trump.
One of the things that I think struck me about odd about this election, and maybe I just missed it, was nobody asked Donald Trump what makes America great. And that was the part that I, what are
his... He wants to make America great again.
Yes.
Nobody said to him, well, what is it that makes America great?
Correct.
What is it you want to do
what is
that we're not doing now?
What are the metrics? Because it seems like, from listening to him, the metrics are that it's a competition. And I think what many would say is what makes us great is America is an anomaly in the world. There are a lot of people, and I think his candidacy has animated that thought that a multi-ethnic democracy, a multicultural democracy, is impossible. And that is what America, by its founding and constitutionally, is. Like every
and
other
it's
state,
becoming more and more,
correct.
Year by year.
Correct.
But do you think it's healthy that we have this now, that in fact this battle, this real sense of finding out who we are?
Yes, but I also
And whether we have gone off track in some way.
Absolutely. You know, I think you, I would rather have this conversation.
Why are we treating Jon Stewart as a real commentator, like he knows the news, like he has anything relevant to say, if he's not a real news person? He spends his entire life in fake news, and then he's treated as a major commentator on the left. I mean, for goodness sake, you can't complain about fake news when CBS This Morning is featuring him as a news personality after he was the leading. He said it himself. He used to say, I'm a fake news guy. This is a fake news show. And that was the way that he would hide behind his political bias. He would say, well, you know, if it's a fake news guy and it's a fake news show, you can't accuse me of being biased. After all, I'm just a clown, right? It's what we used to call the clown nose on, clown nose off routine. And he would play the clown. And then as soon as somebody would question him, he would say, oh, I'm being a clown. Don't worry, I'm being a clown. Then he'd take the clown nose off and do something very serious and political. And then we'd say, well, you're not being a clown right now. He'd say, no, here's my clown nose. You can see, I am indeed a clown. It's amazing. And then they complain about fake news. Then they complain about fake news. And Keith Olbermann is considered a news personality on the left. This guy's a sports commentator. Graduated from the agriculture school at Cornell. And here's Keith Olbermann talking about how he's going to lead the charge against Donald Trump and we're supposed to worry about fake news.
This is not my president, and judging by the margin by which Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, at this rate it'll be larger than Kennedy over Nixon in 1960. This is not America's president either. And so we will resist. Each statement of substance or policy or intent will be met with one of resistance. Each action and event staged by this man who lost the popular vote will be met with protest by that resistance. Each politician whom he fooled with the charm from one of his other personalities, from the banana Republicans already lining up to lick his boots to the Democrats like this fathead Joe Manchin, will be rejected by that resistance. Since no Democratic or liberal politician has yet stepped forward out of the morass of Politics, Inc. to take on the responsibility of the resistance, I, with complete awareness of the presumptuousness and arrogance of this statement, volunteer myself, and I will gladly turn over all these burdens to any more legitimate and informed lawmaker or political or cultural leader who has the guts to take these burdens.
Okay, it is I, Keith Olbermann, former ESPN commentator, who am here to save you from Donald Trump. Yeah, I think we all ought to worry about fake news from the right. Clearly, that's the great threat. The Democrats, by the way, are still in total chaos, and they continue to fail to understand what it is they did wrong. What they did wrong here is the same thing the protesters did wrong last night at University of Wisconsin. They just shout white supremacy at everyone who disagrees with them. It was amazing. Last night, one of the girls was shouting. She actually stopped the crowd, and she goes, "You guys are all white supremacists. You're all white supremacists." And I turned to her, and I said, "I don't even know you. Do you know me? Can you, like, name a thing I've said that's white supremacist? Like, one?" And she says, "Well, you're propagating the image." She didn't know the word propagating. She said, you're showing the image of white supremacy. And I said, "Really? Was it the yarmulke that was the dead giveaway? Like, I'm not the white supremacist's favorite human. You may have noticed. But this is what the left thinks of the right." And so they continue to push this. Howard Dean was doing this the other night. He says that young people are going to treat this like it's Bloody Sunday. They're going to treat it like it's Selma Bloody Sunday. They're going to treat it like it's Kent State Massacre, and they should, because it's just that grave.
So this, I really think this election, they're so disheartened, so down, and so tired and discouraged. This may be their Kent State or their Edmund Pettus Bridge, where you finally realize that you got to do something, that you can't, you know, the path of, as Martin Luther King said, the arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. Well, that's, you know, it only bends towards justice if you make it bend towards justice.
Okay, so again, he thinks that it's all about just, if we tell young people that they were just screwed, then everything will be okay because everybody who voted for Trump is a bad person. That's the way this works. By the way, Trump did pretty well among young people, shockingly well among young people. Part of that, you know, his elevated percentages in the Black and Hispanic community, part of that is because fewer Blacks and Hispanics showed up to vote generally as a percentage of the voting population than they did in 2012. So what that means is that as an absolute number of voters, his absolute number of voters went up, but it didn't go up all that much in those groups. But it looks really big because a lot of people in the Black and Hispanic community didn't show up to vote for Hillary Clinton. The Democrats still can't get a grasp on this. Chuck Todd says it's pretty clear that the Democrats are now attempting to finally oust the Clintons after 20 years of these folks.
But it's all very quiet, subdued, muted even. This election wasn't the wholesale rejection of a candidate like McGovern, Mondale, or Dukakis. But even though she didn't get wiped out in the electoral map, it seems like the Clintons are quietly being wiped off the map in Democratic politics. But instead of being done in a very public way, sort of an excommunication a la Dukakis or Carter, it's just quiet. No rallying, no nothing. Just hoping if you don't say the name, it's like Beetlejuice, it just never appears.
Okay, and what's weird about that is not only did Hillary, you know, actually win more popular votes than Trump, but Bill's strategy, which was to win back some white working class votes by reaching out to those people, that's what's being rejected by the Democrats. The Democrats just keep shouting at people. They keep shouting white supremacy and racism and sexism and bigotry at people, and then they expect that everybody's going to fall at their feet. It ain't going to happen. Paul Ryan has this right. He says there's been no reevaluation among House Democrats after the evaluation. There's been nothing.
The discussion, Alan. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. How do you get your rear end kicked? Like, we got our rear end kicked and not even have a conversation about it. I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, there's no reevaluation. We had a campaign committee meeting today, and, you know, just it wasn't in touch with reality. I mean, we owe it to the American people. You know, I got kids that are growing up in a Donald Trump world because we screwed up, because we haven't been able to craft a message and push policies that connect with working class people.
Okay, and that actually is Tim Ryan, that's Congressman, that's a Democrat, Tim Ryan from Ohio, and he's looking around going, "I'm going to lose my seat if you guys keep this crap up." Democrats don't know what to do because they've doubled down on Obamaism, and Obamaism is a giant failure. Now, meanwhile, on the other side of the aisle, Trump is preparing for his new administration, and it's turned into a reality show. So they've got a C-SPAN camera set up outside the elevators of Trump Tower, and all of the luminaries of the Republican Party are going to visit Trump. And it's really smart what Trump's doing. He's actually he just had Mitt Romney up to visit him today, which is obviously him attempting to push an olive branch. He had Ted Cruz there yesterday. He's taking a lot of his chief opponents during the primaries and the general, and he's bringing them up to him and saying, why don't you be part of this new administration? It would be very bright of him to take Mitt Romney and make him Secretary of the Interior, for example. It would be really bright of him to take Ted Cruz and make him Attorney General. Now, if it's all just he wants to bring them there so that they kiss the ring and then he doesn't give them a job, and he fills it with a bunch of his cronies, that'll be bad Trump. But it will be good Trump if he actually knows enough to staff up with some qualified people who may not have approved of him. That builds consensus inside the party. One of the problems I have here, and we'll see because we haven't had a chance to see yet, is will people actually call out Trump if he doesn't deliver? So Ted Cruz said yesterday he thinks people will call out Trump if Trump doesn't deliver on his promises.
Listen, I think we need to do whatever is necessary to get the job done. And that was a lot of the topic of discussion when I was in Trump Tower. What was how we deliver. I think if Republicans go to Washington and we don't deliver on what we promised, I think we'll be looking at pitchforks and torches in the street, and quite rightly.
Okay, and so we'll see if that's true. I'm not sure that's true. One of my fears is that that's not true, is that if he gives you anything, if Trump gives you anything, everybody will just be happy because at least he wasn't Hillary. See, this is the nice thing about thinking that Hillary is the worst thing that ever was in the history of the world, is that if Trump gives you anything, then you're just going to be able to stay forever, well, at least not Hillary. And my expectations for a Republican are slightly more than that. So if he doesn't hold to his promises, and I've given you the list of his promises before, if he does not hold to his promises, then he should be held accountable, and I hope that Republicans do it. Early indicators say that that is somewhat unlikely. Here's a focus group from Frank Luntz. Frank Luntz did a focus group last night with a bunch of Republicans, and he asked them, what would Trump have to do to lose your support?
I don't think I'd ever fully drop my support for him, but I would be hesitant about if he says anything that's crazy now that he's in the presence. Like all the things that he says that are controversial, or if he insults someone, for example. I feel like he has a very big ego that if he gets shot at, he might say something, you know, that's a little unpresidential. And me as a supporter, I'm fine with whatever he says, but I feel like he has to kind of walk a fine line with what he says now that he's dealing with other countries and other people. So.
People say, how could you support someone that behaved in that manner? And that's not really what an election is about. We're not electing someone to, you know, to be a Sunday school teacher. It's about getting the economy.
I think that if he breaks his core promises, the promises that he made to all of us, the American people, he's not going to get reelected in 4 years, and he knows that. So he needs to deliver.
I can't personally blame him, but I just want to see how he addresses the police tensions, because now we have protesters and all these other people, and it's all basically police involved. So just to see how he addressed that, you know, across the nation.
I'm looking at the first 100 days and hoping that he can get a short list accomplished, which will, I think, make a lot of people's fears go away and see that he is good on his promises, and that if we can get something accomplished off the list or a few things off the list in the first 100 days, I think that over the next 4 years, I think we'll believe that he might be able to get a lot of things done.
So. Once Trump gets his mojo going, he's going to prove to everybody, Republican, Democrat, that he can do it, and he's going to unite. We are going to come together. We have to.
Okay, and then Luntz asked the focus group what would make people stop supporting, and 15 of the 23 people in his focus group said nothing. Okay, well, I hope that what you're hearing on that tape is more reflective than that poll, because I hope that people hold him accountable just the way that I thought that we should hold Bush accountable or Obama accountable. If your adherence is to ideology and philosophy instead of to a person, you're going to be much better off. Put not your faith in princes, gang. That's a mistake. Okay, time for some things I like, things I hate, and then we'll do some mailbag. So, things that I like. Since I've been in Soviet Stalinist Russia on campus lately, I've been doing a lot of Russian history this week. So, Concise History of the Russian Revolution by Richard Pipes. Richard Pipes is one of the best historians on Russia. This is a very, very good book about the Russian Revolution, about 350 pages, and a very easy read, very well written. It tells you things that you don't know, like the fact that America actually had the opportunity to topple the Bolsheviks under Woodrow Wilson, and Wilson pulled back because he wanted the Reds to have self-determination, which ends up in horror and bloodshed for the next 80 years, demonstrating once again that if America does have the capacity to play a role in the world, America should do so. And that was one case where we should have pushed a little harder, and we would have gotten the white Russians as opposed to the red Russians, and world history would have been very different. There probably is no World War II, and things change radically. Okay, time for things I hate. Let's do it. So So, things I hate. There's a piece today by Virginia Heffernan over at Letter. Okay, this is Lena Dunham's letter. And this is just, it's pretty spectacular. I can't tell whether I love it or whether I hate it because it's just so awesome. It's called Hillary Clinton is More Than a President, which is weird since it turns out that she's actually less than a president this week. It says, she is an idea, a world historical heroine, light itself. This is not a joke. This is what it actually says. She's an idea. She's not an idea. She's a crazy old crone. A world historical heroine. Whenever people use the term world historical, that's a Marxist term. It talks about these great figures around whom history revolves. Light itself? Really? Hillary was light itself? And here's what it says. You do have to love this. When people told me they hated Hillary Clinton, or far worse, that they were not fans, I wish I had said in no uncertain terms, I love Hillary Clinton. I am in awe of her. I am set free by her. She will be the finest world leader our galaxy has ever seen. I wish in those exchanges I had not asked gentle, tolerant questions about a hater's ridiculous allergy to her or Clinton's fictional misdeeds and imagined character flaws. More deeply still, I wish I had not reasoned with anyone, patiently countering their ludicrous emotionalism and psychologically disturbed theories. Okay, she can't call anyone ludicrously emotional and psychologically disturbed after she called Hillary Rodham Clinton light itself, the lady who is threatening her husband's sexual assault victims. And the lady who's so corrupt, she set up a private server just to hide crap so that she could do her go-betweening with the Clinton Foundation. And this lady says, I wish I had said flatly, I love her. As if I had been asked about my mother or daughter. No defensiveness or polemics, not dignifying the crazy allegations with so much as a Snopes link. Maybe I love her. Seems too womany, too sentimental, too unpragmatic, not coalition building, kind of culty. But people say with impunity they love Obama, the State of Israel, their churches, Kurt Cobain. In the end, I wish I'd said it because it's true. Okay, first of all, you shouldn't love Obama. Loving the State of Israel is loving the existence of a Jewish state. I love America. I love the State of Israel. I love Great Britain. I love Western civilization. Loving your church presumably channels your ideas. Loving Kurt Cobain means you love his art, not the fellow who shot himself, presumably. But you shouldn't love politicians. You shouldn't. It's a big mistake. She says, I'm not alone in my commitment. Millions of Clinton supporters, we were thanked by Clinton as the secret private Facebook sites, expressed it among themselves all the time in raptures or happy tears with each new display of our heroine's ferocious intelligence, depth, and courage. We were frankly bewildered by the idea that anyone would hedge her commitment to her. You don't have to be her friend. Yes, she's made a mistake. Lesser of two evils. We don't remember anyone turning to this stock ambivalence when discussing Obama, Babe Ruth, FDR. Okay, that's because Obama generated a cult following that was unjustifiable. Babe Ruth was the greatest baseball player in the history of the game. And FDR made himself into a cult figure as well. I mean, this is amazing. It's just the level of adoration for these people is so out of this world. You wonder why I object to the level of adoration that I see from somebody with regard to Trump. I don't like adoration, period, okay? Adoration should be saved for your God and for your family and for your spiritual leaders, and it should not be something that you do for politicians, because that's just gross and terrible. It's just awful. And so the fact that the Democrats do it, it's awful when Democrats do it, it's awful when Republicans do it. It's so insane, though. Lena Dunham also, she had an insane meltdown last week, and I talked about it on the show a couple of days ago. Now she posted a message from her rabbi, Joel Simons. And apparently her rabbi never told her, don't get naked in public. And here's what it says. It says, quote, today marks the seventh day of grieving and sitting Shiva for the loss of our country and the woman who inspired us. Okay, number one, Hillary didn't die. Number two, America isn't dead. Number three, it's kind of disrespectful to the institution of Shiva, which is when you sit for 7 days after a close relative dies. And it's not just a friend. It has to be a close relative. You don't sit Shiva for your best friend. You sit Shiva for your dad or for your mom or for your brother or your sister or your kids. You don't even do it for in-laws, okay? Shiva is like a very private, intimate, special thing. Sitting Shiva for the country based on Donald Trump being elected and Hillary Clinton not is really amazing. He says, as Judaism teaches us, after 7 days of Shiva, we stand up, we emerge from the dark. We do not have to accept, we do not have to move on, but we stand up. So today we emerge from the darkness, capital we. We are taught that the righteous do not complain of the darkness, but rather create light. Today we begin to create light, and we do so as the resistance, and we fight and fight and fight for good, for love, and for justice. And this is Rabbi Joel Simons incorporating the words of Rav Kook. Rav Kook was the first chief rabbi of the State of Israel. I have a feeling that Rav Kook would not have been in line with the Lena Dunham prescription on politics or culture. So, again, it is amazing. The bitter tears are somewhat delicious. They really are. But it is amazing that people worship politicians this way, and I hate politician worship. Okay, time for some mailbag. So it's been a busy week, gang. Jerome? Jerome writes, Dear Ben, would you support any reform of the Electoral College system? If so, to what extent? I understand the point of it, but it has to be hard being a conservative in New York or California or a liberal in Texas. Thanks for all you do at the Daily Wire. Much appreciated. Okay, so I think that there's a good case to be made that the Electoral College, if you still want to keep the institution, which was designed to stop bad people from getting into office, I don't know how realistic that is. If you want to keep the institution, there's a good case to be made that what you ought to do is you ought to have states pass laws where they are proportionally allocating their votes. So that way, if Donald Trump wins a third of the votes in California, he doesn't lose every vote in California. If he wins a third of the votes in New York, he doesn't lose every vote in New York. I think that the presidency is supposed to be representative. It's a representative office. But the other reason people give for the Electoral College is it gives some of the rural states outsized influence. The problem, of course, is that it means that nobody ever has to campaign in a lot of these states. Nobody ever feels the need to draw my vote in California. My vote in California doesn't count for anything. So I definitely see the case against the Electoral College. Whenever there's a case where whoever wins the Electoral College but not the popular vote is in favor of the Electoral College, all of a sudden, you saw it with Trump himself in 2012. He complained about the Electoral College. By now, he's saying the Electoral College is the greatest institution of all time. I have to admit that I am split on it. Matt Gardner writes, Hello, Ben. What are your thoughts on people who describe themselves as spiritual but not religious? Love the show. Just started reading True Allegiance. Spiritual but not religious means you don't believe in a God that has rules. It just means that you believe in something, some power that guides your life, but you're not going to actually explain what that power requires of you. Religion is the idea that God has demands of you. Spirituality is the idea that you have demands of God. I care less about your demands for God than God's demands of you, because God's demands of you are what make you a better person. Kyle writes, Jedi Master Ben, what is your assessment of Trump's 100-day plan? We did this, I think, a few days ago. Go back and listen to our broadcast from a few days ago. I can't remember which one it was. We went through Trump's 100-day plan. I think it was 2 days after the election. And I said that I think about two-thirds of it is very good. I think about one-third of it is crap. I think some of the stuff that's good is vague. And so we'll have to see what he actually does. And that's why, honestly, I'm really eager to get past the speculation, because you can't go, there's no going right in speculation, right? Because if I speculate and it turns out that Trump is wonderful, then I speculated wrong. If I speculate that he's going to be great and then he turns out to be crap, then I also speculated wrong and I'm disappointed. So I prefer to just hold off judgment until he actually does things and then judge him based on the things that he's doing. Justin writes, what are your thoughts on California seceding from the Union? Do you think it'll happen? No, it's never going to happen. The feds basically have to give their okay. Not going to happen. Also, it's funny to me that the leftists in California want to do that, considering that leftists across the country will then lose every election for the rest of time. Neil writes, if the violence and anger of the protesters is justified by PTSD of the election lost, at what point will the violence needed to shut it down be justified? Well, Neil, look, I think self-defense is justified. If you're driving in your car and somebody tries to hijack your car, you have the absolute right to shoot them. And this idea that people can act violently and shut down civil society because they're angry, I'm getting very tired. I have to say, I am very, very tired at a society that suggests that all anger is justified. So during the primaries, it was Trump voters are angry, and we have to know why they're angry. Well, if they're angry for a good reason, I'm more than happy to talk about why they're angry. If they're angry because they think that Mexico stole all our jobs, that's just silly. Okay, the same thing is true of Black Lives Matter. People keep saying, oh, they're angry. And if they're angry, that means they're right. No, anger doesn't mean you're right. Anger just means you're angry. And then we have to determine whether you are right or wrong. I'm very consistent on anger and emotion, okay? Emotion exists, but that doesn't always mean that it's justified. So it's up to us to determine whether it's justified and how to deal with it. Casey says, who in your consideration is the smartest character in all of fiction? In all of fiction? Well, that's a great question. Smartest character in all of fiction. Well, I have to say that I'm a big fan. That's a large group of people. But you do have to love kind of smart villains. So in fiction right now, in kind of fictional TV, I was a big fan of Tywin Lannister. No spoilers. But Tywin Lannister was the smartest character on Game of Thrones, and so I thought he's very smart. In terms of when I was growing up, I used to read a lot of Agatha Christie novels, so Hercule Poirot was a smart guy, obviously. Sherlock Holmes, super smart. Let me think about that one a little bit more. Let me think about that one a little bit more, because there are a lot of smart characters in fiction. Great question. David writes, Hail, Prophet of Harambe. I appreciate it. In previous podcasts, you've discussed a convention of the states to add amendments to the Constitution. How far off is this from happening? What amendments have been talked about being added? What amendments would you most like to see? Convention of the states requires a two-thirds of the states get together and hold a convention, and then they can pass amendments without the help of Congress, which is amazing. By the way, Republicans are one state legislature away from controlling two-thirds of all state houses in the country, which is an amazing thing. So that means that, you know, we're on the verge of really, and it could shift in 2 years. The first thing, the one that I would do, the constitutional amendment that I would do, is every bill has to be single topic, no omnibus packages. Every bill has to be single topic. Every bill has to be within a certain amount of length, and there has to be a way that normal people can read it. Because the biggest problem we have is that every bill is 1,000 pages long. Nobody reads it. It's piled up with crap and regulations. Second thing, I would put in force a constitutional amendment that bans regulatory power from the executive branch to utterly. Get rid of the regulatory state. The regulatory state is garbage. You should not have independent rulemaking authority in the executive branch. If Congress wants to write a law, they can damn well be specific about it. It shouldn't be some appointee making up the laws they go on and filling in the gaps. That's not their job. Their job is to enforce. That's why it is the enforcement body, right? It is the executive branch. It executes. It is not the legislative branch. It does not legislate. Bradley writes, "Hello, Ben. I was rethinking the entire timeline of the GOP in America following the election. I recognize that Trump has yet to serve as president. If he governs as expected, what are the odds somebody runs against him in 2020? If somebody significant runs against him, what would the consequences be?" Well, he'd have to be pretty bad. I mean, after this bloodbath, he'd have to be pretty bad in order for somebody to primary him. He'd have to do some really quite terrible things, get us into a stupid war, you know, do something that really sours people on him for somebody to primary him. He's getting rid of all of his possible primary opponents right now by inviting them to Trump Tower and co-opting them, which is smart. If somebody were to run against him and to pose a serious challenge, he'd lose, because there's yet to be an incumbent president who faces a serious primary challenge, or even a semi-serious primary challenge, who doesn't end up losing a general election. Daniel writes, "It's unbelievable. 70% of white non-educated vote went to Trump. Those are minority numbers, meaning like it's like a minority group voting. Do you think the left has turned the white non-educated group into a minority-minded group? Did the left lose this election long ago?" Well, I think that the left stopped caring about a lot of, you know, white folks in the sticks a long time ago. Non-college educated white voters is not just because the left hasn't been pandering to them, it's because the left has been calling them racist. And you call people racist long enough and they start to think of themselves as a group. Right? If you other people, they start to think of themselves as a group, to use the language of the left. The left is constantly saying, "Oh, you're othering black people, you're othering Latino." What happens when you other white people? When you other them, when you turn them into the other, it's only a matter of time until tribal affinities begin to rear their ugly head. I don't think that this was a bunch of white racists getting together and saying, "Let's go get Hillary. Let's vote for Trump." I don't think that's what it was. I think on an individual level, if I thought that, I'd be a lot more scared for the future of the country. I think that on an individual level, a lot of people just said, "I'm sick of being told that I'm stupid and that the country is biased in my favor when I'm not even college educated. I may not have a job. Leave me the hell alone. I'm voting for the guy who makes me feel good about myself, and that guy is Trump." Jonathan writes, "Do you think Trump's business expertise will be of any benefit in his presidency?" I mean, I've said during primaries in general, I don't think Trump's a great businessman. I think he's a great marketer. From what I hear, he's a micromanager in his own business, so we'll see how well that works in a business that is the American people's business. I've yet to see, I don't think the Trump, there's a revisionist history that happens when you win. And the revisionist history goes, everything that happened was genius, right? So now everything that happened inside the Trump campaign was genius. I don't think that. I think the Trump campaign was really badly handled. I think the Clinton campaign was even worse handled, and he got lucky, and she got unlucky. But all that said, you know, we have yet to see. So I'm gonna hold off judgment, as I keep saying. All of it's speculation until he takes office. Jacob says, "What's your opinion on scientists growing embryonic-like stem cells for research? Do you think this is still morally repugnant or a viable way to research stem cells?" Well, first of all, the vast majority of scientific breakthroughs have happened not from embryonic stem cells, which are undifferentiated, but from adult stem cells, which are already differentiated, or at least are adult-specific. And that is, there are embryonic, I'm with Bush on this. Already present embryonic stem cell lines are a fine thing. Once they're already established, they're established. Sort of like the original vaccinations were originally taken from the cells of an aborted fetus, of an aborted baby. That doesn't mean that you get rid of all the vaccines now. It means that the original act was bad. So the original act can be bad, but now that they exist, there's no reason to discard everything. As far as opening new lines of embryonic stem cell research, I think it does provide a serious moral problem. By the way, quick update, NBC News is confirming that Sunday Donald Trump is going to meet with Mitt Romney to discuss whether Romney should be Secretary of State, which would make a lot of sense. It would be a brilliant move by Trump. It would be excellent Trump. It'd be very, very smart. Romney would be a solidifying force on the foreign front. And he would also really help bring the party together in a major way. I don't think Trump will do it. I think that Romney is way too anti-Putin for Trump's liking. I think it's likely this is all smoke and mirrors. But if he did, it would be a brilliant, brilliant move by Trump. It would be excellent Trump, not just good Trump, excellent Trump. Well, we'll be back next week to discuss all of the new developments, plus the left's continuing meltdown. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show.
Did you know a baby's heart begins to beat at just 3 weeks? At 5 weeks, the heartbeat can be heard on ultrasound. This can sometimes be a baby's only defense in the womb, because when moms who are considering abortion hear that baby's heartbeat via ultrasound, they're twice as likely to choose life. Preborn rescues 200 babies every day from abortion by simply providing moms with ultrasounds. By 6 weeks, a baby's eyes are forming. By 10 weeks, a baby's elbows and knees are able to bend. Preborn needs your help to save these precious lives. Preborn is out there on the front lines. They're helping women choose life. Please consider sponsoring one ultrasound for just $28 and save a life today. Or if you have the means, consider a leadership gift of $5,000. That tax-deductible gift will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours and help rescue 200 innocent lives. Go to preborn.com/Ben to donate today. It's the most important thing you're going to do today, maybe ever, because saving lives doesn't get more important than that. Go to preborn.com/Ben. These ultrasounds are, in fact, life-saving. Moms meet their babies long before they're born. When they meet their baby, it makes it a lot harder for them to get an abortion. Go to preborn.com/Ben or dial #250 and say keyword baby. That's #250 baby.